Hello, aliens, ghosts, and robots. Hi, it's Keith. Welcome back to An Invisible Sun. Hope you're doing well, and I'm glad you're here. So in today's episode, Christopher and company are going to attempt to unravel the clue left by Evan about an explorer named Cornelis de Houtman. Now, de Houtman was a real explorer. He sailed for the Dutch. He was the first Dutch captain to chart an expedition to Indonesia, or the East Indies, as they called it. Now, the Portuguese had been doing this for a while, and de Houtman's voyage was very much a disaster, only considered mildly successful, with over two-thirds of his crew dying along the way. Still, the fact that he made it and set up a relationship with the rulers in Indonesia meant the Dutch could do it. And eventually the Dutch would come to supplant the Portuguese in the spice trade to the East Indies. Of course, like many captains of the age of colonialism, de Houtman did some pretty awful things to the people he met. After his crew was attacked by pirates, he took revenge on a civilian population nearby that had nothing to do with it, ordering his men to rape and kill them. He would then go on to captain several other voyages, but eventually met his death on the sea from the first woman admiral in the modern world, Kumala Hayati. As of this recording, we celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day here in the United States a couple of weeks ago. Of course, this used to be known as Columbus Day. Now, Columbus has been held up as a hero in the colonial era, mostly supported by the Catholic Church and the Knights of Columbus, who wanted a Catholic hero they could rally around. But the truth is, Columbus also did some pretty terrible things to the people he met. And we must acknowledge the harm he did, enslaving the native people and decimating their populations. This seems to be a recurring theme in human history. These explorations resulted in great riches and power for the countries that sponsored them. But the costs, especially many years later, often remain undiscussed. What are we willing to pay to have so much? Enjoy today's episode. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 14. We hurried down the sloping rock tunnels, the darkness lit only by the sweeping beams of flashlights. Our steps churned up pink dust. I sneezed violently. Matthew shoved me. I wiped the moisture off my upper lip with the back of my hand, and when the light chanced on it, there was blood streaked there.
"Keep quiet,"
said Matthew. His pistol was never far from me.
"Here's the intersection."
Lucy shined her flashlight on some metal supports decorated with crude Christian crosses that held up the rough rock roof. Further down one of the tunnels, panels were set into the rock walls, each etched with a name and two dates, birth and death. St. Michael's was one of the first churches established on Mars. The settlement it served no longer exists, built above ground, eventually abandoned for the safer stability of the townships. But the underground cathedral remained, as do those that were buried here. Early Martians died often and died young, most from cancer or accidents which, on Mars, out on the surface, are usually fatal. I considered the gun in my back and wondered if I would end up joining the intrepid dead. Sister Lucy shined her light down one corridor after another.
"We are in the tombs. Any suggestions?"
Matthew shook his head.
"Where would he hide it? I know the older tombs are deeper in. Perhaps somewhere obscure."
Oliver was studying a map on his own tablet, the pale light illuminating his wrinkled face in the dark.
"Wait a tick. Let me see if I can find anything here. Dead ends, large crypts. I don't know."
A headache was creeping up behind my left eye, likely caused by the blow to my head earlier. I was exhausted and my joints ached. I wondered if I would be able to keep up with them. And Matthew seemed far too eager to cut their losses. That is, me. I needed to show them that I was honest and useful.
Are there records of who is buried here?
Lucy turned to me, uncertainly.
Yes, some. They are incomplete. There were some early settlements along this part of the Valley Marineris, but many records were lost. In the message Evan left me, he mentioned Cornelis de Houtman. Now, de Houtman was a 16th century Dutch explorer. Many of the first Martian colonies were founded by Dutch families, correct? So, it stands to reason that maybe there's a de Houtman buried here? I don't know why else he'd mention it.
Oliver blinked slowly at me, his deeply furrowed brow growing even more wrinkled, as if he couldn't quite believe my words. But then he was tapping on his tablet's screen. Lucy moved to him and stood on tiptoes to peer over his shoulder.
The Republic Historical Archives.
Yeah.
Look for alternate spellings as well.
Yes, I know. Okay, got the records and, No. No de Houtman.
What about with two N's?
There's no bloody Houtman with 12 N's either, sister.
The records could be missing. We should search the grave markers.
Matthew's jaw was set as he kept watch on the tunnel behind us.
We don't have time.
I felt sure de Houtman was the clue. Evan wouldn't have mentioned it otherwise. But if it wasn't de Houtman, maybe it was something to do with his voyage? I tried to recall what I could. De Houtman was the first Dutch captain to establish a trade route to the East Indies, eventually leading to Dutch domination of the trade there. The voyage was catastrophic, poorly supplied. Hundreds of sailors died on the way. De Houtman did some despicable things to those he met. Seemed about right for the age of colonialism. But what else? Maybe his ships?
Search for Doifken.
Oliver blinked at me.
What? It was one of his ships.
I spelled it for him. Duifken.
It means little dove, I think.
Oliver tapped it into his screen. Then his eyes went wide.
Yes. It says here, one of the first abbots of the cathedral. And, damn, it doesn't say where he's buried.
Well, if he was an abbot, perhaps he's buried in a special place. Check the map. Maybe there's a special tomb for abbots or priests or bishops or some such.
We need to keep moving.
Lucy nodded her agreement and we started down the tunnel into the first tombs.
We will keep moving. Oliver, keep researching. Find what you can.
We followed her, though with Matthew's hand on my shoulder, I didn't have much choice in the matter. As we went deeper and further under the cathedral, the tunnels grew smaller and rougher. There were signs of old construction, century-old modular wall units, and thick tunnel supports. The decor grew more ornate, decidedly Gothic, and festooned with religious symbols. The rows of graves in the walls became uneven, more haphazardly placed. The light from the flashlights bounced off the metal markers, giving everything a faint, dusty illumination. When we reached another intersection with a domed roof, Oliver held us up to study the map. I was breathing heavily, and despite the cold Martian underground, I felt flushed and hot, my face streaked with sweaty grime, and my head still pounded. I glanced up and was startled by sudden beauty above me. A mosaic depicting dancing angels ringing a violet disc set into the dome over our heads. Faceless, the angels seemed to drift in a slow spiral about the center, their wings dramatically long. It was fascinating and lovely and more than a little eerie. The kind of thing I would have loved to come see when I didn't have a gun jammed in my back and wasn't on the run from corporate mercenaries. But my head felt like it was splitting open, and I pressed my fist into my pulsating eye to try to staunch the pain. Sister Lucy looked around.
This was where they had one of the research stations.
Matthew doesn't seem to hear her, tight urgency on his tattooed face.
Well, just a minute. These tunnels are old, and I don't know how good this map is.
My vision went all muzzy. The mosaic blurred, and the shadows of the tunnel seemed to stretch and claim more of the light. In the distance, I heard a sound. A soft thrum. It's so soft, I wondered if I heard anything at all. But then I hear it again. A vibrating bass, or like shivering friction across a drum's skin. I tried to find where the sound was coming from, looking down one tunnel, then another. But the sound didn't seem to come from a particular direction. It was like the rush of blood in one's own head. My eyes were too blurry to see clearly, no matter how I tried to blink and squint to force them back into focus. My skin crawled, though, as I listened, and though I cannot clearly see anything moving in the darkness, I feel with preternatural certainty that something moved there. Something is there. The thrumming was getting louder, rolling out of the darkness around me.
What is that?
The other three stopped in their quiet conversation and looked at me. I could tell immediately from their expressions, blurry though they are, that they did not hear it.
What is what?
I closed my eyes and rubbed at them. My headache throbbed as strong as ever, and I took deep breaths to try to focus. The muffled, drumming pulse was already fading away. My vision was clearing, leaving only the darkness and the silence of the crypts.
I heard...
But I was interrupted by a different sound. The distant, echoing shout of a man's voice. The soldiers are in the tunnels, looking for us.
This way.
Oliver ran off down one of the tunnels, and we followed, leaving behind the question of what I had heard. But I had heard something. Something was there. Or I thought there was. But the sound, it felt real. It was real. Oliver led us along another tunnel with old conduit pipes slung from the rock ceiling. By its pitted appearance and century-old design, it must be some of the earliest human construction on Mars. The grave markers in the walls here were smaller and mismatched in size and style. Markers also appeared on the floor, metal plates set into the orange-brown rock. Lucy led us so that we did our best to step around them, I suppose out of respect for the dead. It seemed curious to me that we would do this with armed men coming after us. The dead seemed unlikely to care, after all. Matthew brought up the rear, pushing me along in front of him, though he's frequently casting his gaze behind us as we go.
Oliver, how far?
Just ahead. This map is right. Through here.
We ducked under a low-hanging pipe and into a rough-hewn cave. The walls and ceiling looked as if they were excavated with claws, and there was ancient religious paraphernalia strewn all around. Corroding metal crucifixes, stubs of candles, dust-covered artificial flowers, moldering prayers written on paper. It was a testament of love for those buried in this small chamber, a love which, by appearances, had died and been forgotten for decades. Three comparatively ornate tombs are here. Three abbots buried in the ground. Metal slabs ringed with loose piles of Martian rock. I couldn't read the Dutch on the markers, but names are names. And Abbot Doifkins is on the left. Lucy shined her light on the surface, and there are streaks in the dust, signs it had been disturbed. I could see a handprint there. It was likely Evans. But there was no time for grief. How I resented that. Oliver stared at the grave, then at us.
I guess it's inside.
He shined his light on the other graves and into the corners of the room, but there was no sign of other disturbances.
I suppose so.
Lucy approached the marker. Matthew pursed his lips and moved to the entrance.
This is a dead end.
Sister Lucy didn't seem to hear him. She knelt at the abbot's grave, crossed herself, and murmured a prayer. So Oliver answered him.
Yeah, so? That means we'll be trapped in here when they catch up to us.
Oliver shifted nervously.
Maybe they won't find us before we can get out of here. There's a lot of tunnels to search.
No. We've been leaving a trail even an idiot could follow, stirring up dust and leaving tracks. They're going to find us, and soon.
Well, what do we do then?
I'll take care of it. Lucy?
She looked up from the grave, somehow still calm, despite what was happening.
Yes?
I'll be back. Give me 5 minutes or so. But you'll need to watch him.
He shoved me roughly toward her. I managed to keep my balance. Perhaps I was getting used to the low gravity, but I was growing tired of being shoved around.
Do not worry. We will be fine.
Give me the gun. I'll do it.
No. You need to find us another way out.
He turned the pistol over in his hands and held it out to Lucy, grip first. She eyed it mistrustfully a moment, then took it with a resigned sigh.
Back shortly.
Matthew shouldered his pack and vanished into the tunnel. He might as well have said he was going to the corner store. Lucy held the gun as if it were not a weapon at all, more like a gun-shaped paperweight, barrel pointed at the ground, fingers nowhere near the trigger. She looked at me thoughtfully for just a moment, then clicked the safety and placed it on the ground next to her.
There are 2 crowbars in my pack. Will you bring them to me, please?
I did. Oliver watched me warily for a moment, but eventually resumed studying the map on his tablet. Lucy began clearing some of the rocks that surrounded the abbot's tomb out of the way. I set down the crowbars and knelt to assist her. Eventually, I said,
Look, I really didn't know the tracking program was there.
Lucy dug at the dry, rocky sand along the edge of the metal plate with her strong fingers, finding a seam.
Oliver?
Hmm?
The tracking program you found in Christopher's tablet. Do you have any way of determining how it was installed?
Well, I need a little more time to pull it apart. But it looked like a virus of some sort, hiding in the usual network software. If that's the case, it could have come in from anywhere. Anytime the reader downloaded information. Messaging, map downloads, purchases. But that doesn't mean he's innocent, you know. Could be part of his cover.
Lucy nodded at that.
I understand.
She looked me in the eyes directly, with a kind of earnest and powerful perception.
I want to trust you. I want to believe that you were sent to us.
In the gloom, with the harsh shadows thrown by the flashlights, her face looked older and shrewder, a kind of wisdom gained through struggle and time. The only way wisdom comes, I suppose. There is a mix of jaded resignation at war with yearning hope that I could see in her.
Do you believe in providence? Providence? You mean, like, fate? Well, something like that. Fate, to me, always implied something impersonal about the structure of the world. Providence is God's foresightful attention to us. Fate does not care. God does.
I figured sister was more than just a title, and the question about religious doctrine was bound to come up sooner or later. I considered a diplomatic non-answer, but I was too tired, and my head hurt too much to play that polite game.
I'm afraid I don't see much difference. I suppose it's comforting to think there's a God that is going to look out for us. But if that's true, his work is rather spotty. All throughout history, some people seem to have more of his attention than others, and I don't see how an all-loving God can play favorites. I don't believe in either fate or providence. I'm sorry, sister.
She kept on smiling at me quietly, like she's heard all this before.
No need to apologize. Your reply is honest. Help me with this lid, will you?
She passed me a crowbar and pointed to the seam she excavated around the abbot's grave. I knelt in the powdery orange dust and fitted the tip of the tool under the metal lid of the tomb, and she did likewise.
Providence is a tricky thing. Too many people think it means God is going to do the work for them, when actually, you still have to do all the work yourself.
Oliver snorted faintly from nearby.
Then what's the bloody point?
We pushed against the metal plate, and it came free easily in the low gravity. We slid it across the ground. Dust swirled up out of the tomb, and Lucy shined her flashlight into the grave. The abbot's mummified remains leered up at us, the body leathery and brittle, nearly swallowed up in his burial robes. I suppose I should have been shocked or scared, but honestly, it was all too surreal. Like I was watching some dream play, some cheap movie, grave robbers on Mars, chased by armed men. Lucy closed her eyes.
Forgive us, Father.
The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. Tightness squeezed my chest as if something was pressing on my torso and I had to work to breathe. In the darkness behind us, that spectral thrum returned, creeping through my ears and trickling through my head. I felt it before I heard it, and I turned, eyes swimming, to the tunnel. Somewhere out there, in the forgotten depths of the planet, black within black, something moved. I was as sure of it as I was sure of the crowbar in my hand, or my breath, or the feel of the rough rock under my feet. The sound ran through me like a stone plunging into a pool, and just as I feel it and hear it, it faded like evaporating mist. The shapeless uncertainty that was nevertheless certain passed by and vanished.
What is that?
I rubbed my temple to fight the migraine blooming within. Lucy seems strangely quiet now.
What did you hear? It was, I don't know, a kind of drumming pulse from far away.
Oliver scratched his nose nervously, exchanging a look with Lucy.
There are air exchangers near here, part of the terraforming farm.
It wasn't mechanical. Look, something is out there. I didn't see it, really, but it was there.
Sister Lucy moved next to me and touched my arm in a comforting gesture, which took me by surprise.
I believe you, but we had better finish this up. Matthew will be back soon, and we will need to be ready to move.
Clearly neither had seen nor heard what I did, which meant, in all likelihood, it was in my head. And if I was starting to be unable to tell reality from my imaginings, then I was much sicker than I thought. Lucy tugged at my arm.
Evan gave you the task of retrieving the message. Let us finish that task.
She was right in that. I wanted to finish this task for Evan.
So, where would he hide a key? Are there pockets?
I knelt over the open grave to look over the abbot. I noticed, though, that its jaw is slightly ajar, dried up lips pulled away, teeth revealed. Well, it would be a convenient and quick hiding place, wouldn't it? I mentally braced myself for what I had to do. I placed one hand on the dead abbot's forehead, the other on his jaw. The flesh was dry and papery. I pushed down on the jaw. I only wanted to open the mouth a little, but with a horrible snap, the jaw broke free and lolled down onto the corpse's neck. Oliver made a groan of nausea behind me, though Lucy seemed calm as ever. Nestled in the jaw, atop the mummified tongue was a piece of paper wrapped around a data sliver. I took it up, unwrapped the paper. In Evan's hurried handwriting was simply "Barwise." I showed the note to Lucy, and her expression turns serious.
"Barwise salvage on Marley." Marley?
I'd heard of that place, usually on the news.
It's an outpost around Jupiter, isn't it? The Jovian Trojans, actually.
She toyed with the golden crucifix around her neck, deep in thought.
They must have found a way to get it off Mars before Shayot came after them. Oliver, can you check this sliver, please?
Oliver took the sliver from me and tapped it against his tablet. He squinted at the screen.
It's encrypted. Maybe a data key? No way to crack those.
She took the sliver back from him.
All right. See if there's any way for us to get there. A freighter or private transport. Anything we can get a lift on.
To the ass end of the solar system. I'm sure there's loads of ships just waiting for us.
But he started searching on his tablet anyway. Somewhere down the tunnel, there came a loud bang, quickly followed by a tremor that shakes the walls and roof. Dust began to rain down in sheets of pink and orange, and tiny bits of debris pattered against our heads. Matthew's face appeared in the cave entrance, smeared with grime.
I hope you found another way out.
Oliver was coughing and sputtering.
What did you do?
What I had to. I brought down the tunnel leading here. They'll have to dig their way in to get to us. So that buys us some time.
Are you insane? You set off explosives in a pressurized tunnel? You could have opened the whole section to space.
It was a low-yield directed charge. We're deep. I was careful. I told you I did what I had to. But we do need to find another way out.
Lucy brushed bits of debris from her hair and dusted off her hands. Her eyes are troubled.
Matthew, did anyone...
He shook his head.
No. No one was near the charge when it went off.
She nodded, accepting this, a little relieved. Oliver murmured a sputtering diatribe of profanity as he wiped dust from his tablet screen and pulled up the map again. Lucy passed Matthew his pistol. She nodded toward me, then looked at him significantly, meeting his eyes, and sending some silent message. With one more assessing glare at me, he nodded back.
All right.
He holstered his gun.
Did you get it?
Yes. It's on Marley.
Marley. All right. How do we get there?
We will have to get out of here first. Oliver?
Damn it, Matthew. Show me where you blew up the tunnels.
While the two of them conferred, Lucy pressed the data sliver into my hand.
This is yours to guard, Christopher. This is your task.
I stuffed the key into my pocket.
So, you do believe me? That I'm not a spy? Yes, I believe that you are not working for our enemies. And the sound. You believe me when I say I did hear something. I do. But that, too, we'll have to wait. It is complicated.
Oliver stepped over to us and pointed to his screen.
Okay. There are only a couple of tunnels leading back to the train, and Matthew cut them both off. But, look here. There's a major ventilation shaft that runs down from the terraforming farm on the surface above us, feeding air into these tunnels. And there's a place here where the shaft and these catacombs nearly intersect. There might be a maintenance door there. If there is, we can try to find a way up the shaft and into the farm.
Can we get out once there?
Yeah, but only by the train. It's the only tunnel leading away from the cathedral. If they're watching that exit, we're screwed.
They will be watching the train station. But we don't have much other choice. We cannot risk taking the train itself. They'll shut it down once they realize we're aboard. If we can overpower what guards they have there and find some pressure suits, we can make our way along the train tunnel to Candor Chasma or Yos Menza and maybe find a way off Mars there.
Wait, that's a lot of ifs.
We don't have other options.
Oliver chewed on his dirty thumbnail.
But what if there's no maintenance door? There's not one on the map.
It's a likely place to build one. And if not, I have more explosives. Maybe I can open a section of wall to allow us in.
Do you always carry around bombs?
Matthew looked at me carefully.
These are shaped demolition charges, used for excavating. I took them from the mining operation nearby. I thought they would be useful. And it looks like they were.
Oh, you're bloody daft.
Peace. It will do. Let us go. Come, Oliver. You need to lead the way.
What? Why me?
Matthew gave him a motivational shove forward.
Because you have the map.
An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.